You're listening to No Dice, No Problem, a new monthly Asians Represent variety show hosted by Drew Kwan and me, Daniel Kwan, on the One Shot Podcast Network. Check out uncut video and other exclusive content at patreon.com/AZNSrepresent. Welcome, everyone, back to No Dice, No Problem. This is our third episode of the show. I'm Daniel. We've got Drew. And what up? We're going to be... We've got quite the episode ahead of us. I've just come back from first con of the year, I think. Yeah, I just came back from the first con of the year, Breakout Con, and it was awesome. It was super cool. Got to playtest the new game, Wandering Blades, that Liana and I are working on and will be using on Asians Rep. I'm super excited about that. And I played a truckload of Magic over the weekend. It was a lot of fun. A lot of people that we know, like, showed up, a lot of TTRPG folks that were local. Some traveled in. I think Emma and I were there both days, and we played a ton of Magic. We did a panel together. We actually did a cultural consultation during the panel because one of the audience members literally went and asked, like, what does a cultural consultation like look like? What are you kind of looking for? And I said, you know what? We're going to do something now. And I said, everybody in the room, pull out your phone, and I want you to look up the Magic card Dockside Chef from like Kamigawa. And everybody pulled it up, and literally every Asian person that was like attending the panel went, ugh.
Yeah, that one's
tough. And then all the white people were just like, what? Or should I say non-Asian people, were just like, what? And they didn't know. And then we kind of walked them through it. And at the end, everybody was like, I get it. I totally get it. But yeah, Breakout Con was super fun. Would 100% go again. Really excited about the playtest too, because I thought it just went so well. But enough of me sort of like rubbing Breakout Con in your face, Drew. How are you doing?
Listen, I'll get to a convention. Listen, they're just all so far away, you know?
Are there any there've got to be local cons near?
There's like there's like local conventions. Do I know like the ASTL, which is like the Anime St. Louis, is coming up or whatever?
Okay.
I'm not going to that. Like, and like I don't know if there are any game conventions around here. And if there are, right, I don't have any friends going, you know?
Like, oh, that's so sad.
There
are like a handful of people in the Asians Represent server who are like in your area, right? It's Jay.
There are two. There are two that I believe. Shout out to Jay.
Yeah, shout out to Jay. And the other one is we played World War Z together. Mouse.
Yeah.
Shout out to those two. That was a fun game too. You know what's surprisingly on topic too, because this episode is called Daniel and Drew Survive the Apocalypse, and the two other St. Louis folks we played World War Z game with.
We did. That game is so good.
That game is great. Really underrated.
I am very upset that Back for Blood felt worse than World War Z.
Oh God, that game was so disappointing. The game was honestly so disappointing. We were so hyped.
I'd be down to give another try though. Because like there's new DLC. There's like new DLC and shit now.
I don't have Game Pass anymore. I don't want to pay for that game.
Now there's
Agatha would let me expense it for Asians Represent, but I hope
sure. But now there's like this it's not quite a roguelike element, but it's like you can find these caverns or these cave tunnels now.
Right.
That then take you deep into the bowels of like this, the ridden complexes their hive. And you can choose to like keep going further down or like leave to get out with not as good stuff. So it seems cool.
So but really bringing in that sort of roguelike sort of thing, that risk reward.
Yeah, except
element.
I don't, God, you know, the card system was the real draw for me, like the decks that you could build.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, you could build a deck of cards and as you played each
also,
level.
This is this is not a tabletop RPG we're talking about. We're talking about
this is a video
shooter
game. Yeah. And you play as like zombie survivors who are trying to go through these missions, and like it's set up like a campaign, but the further you go in it, every new level you add like extra cards to your equipment.
It's like your loadout, almost.
And they modify things. But the issue is when you build your deck, it's not randomized. You're not drawing them like a hand of shuffled cards. Mm-hmm. It's just like you build them in brackets of five and you always draw them in those orders. And that's so boring, because the appeal of roguelikes and things like that is like the chaos of it. And you don't have that in that game. And so it's boring. You just, because you always know the exact route that you're always going to take with your deck. So it's like you, half of those cards don't matter, because you're always going to pick a certain set of cards.
You want it to be like Slay the Spire.
Yeah, I want it to be chaos.
You want it to be like Slay the Spire, where it's like kind of random. And I would be interested to see what would trigger, you know, the drawing of a card, right? Like what triggers it? But yeah, no, I totally feel the same way about Back for Blood.
World War Z was lit, though.
World War Z was really great. That game is phenomenal. I just wish there was more support for it. There was that new version that came out where they had a first person like mode.
Really?
You can go first person in now.
I know they added the French DLC, like the
But we played that. We played that.
I don't remember.
It was a long. It was a long time ago. That game was great. Yeah. I mean, right now we're playing
Sons
of the Forest. Yeah.
Yeah.
I said Sons of the Florist.
Hey, you know what? It's a whole different game. But
Sons of the Forest. It's just like a family business where you have to survive the expectations of your family as you have a flower business.
Already do that every day. Not the florist part.
But not the florist part. Just being an Asian American kid.
Yeah. You know.
No, we're playing Sons of the Forest, and that's really fun. We haven't played it this week, actually, and we need to kind of get back into that, because you ended up losing all of your stuff because of a glitch.
My game.
Sorry to remind you. That was super disappointing.
This makes me so mad.
But, you know, it's what you get with an early access game. And at least we didn't lose all of our progress.
Yeah, that would have been real bad.
That would have been, honestly, that would have been game ending for me. That happened with the first Dead Island game on the PS3 for me. So I was like, I think it was like 60 or 70% way through the original Dead Island. And I ran into a save glitch and I lost hours of progress on like a mission that I was playing. And I just stopped. I was like, fuck this. And I just never went back.
Yep.
Because
I understand.
I don't want to do that again. And it isn't compelling enough for me to kind of go and just like, you know what? I'm going to do all of this. Every single like retrieval mission over again. Nah.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. So, you know, it is what it is. And when you find a good sort of like survival video game or multiplayer video game, I should say as well, you kind of stick with it. But I mean, look, if we get a group of people back into World War Z, I'll try it again. But right now, Sons of the Forest. And then I eventually have to get the Resident Evil 4 remake. Because
I'm surprised you aren't already knee deep in that game.
I just haven't had the time. I mean, I talked about it before. Like, I have a really hard time getting into single player games because I always want to socialize over video games and play like another thing. Like last night, we were just playing Battlefield 2042. I have, I think, over 500 hours on it now at this point.
I don't doubt it.
But like, I love that game, but not because the gameplay is like extraordinary. Like, it's a great experience, but I like the social aspect of it. Yeah, I haven't been getting into any single player games just because of that. Like, I still haven't really made it that far into Persona 4 because, again, I'd rather socialize. Genshin Impact, I kind of like go through waves of that. Like, I'll play through some quests and stuff. But then, like, I'd rather socialize. I just bought the Neverwinter Enhanced Edition on Steam because it was on sale because of the D&D Direct, right? I don't know if I'm assuming it was timed. But it was like $6 Canadian. It was like 75% off.
And yeah.
Like,
you know what? Yeah. I'll have it. It was timed. Because they had as part of the announcements or whatever that all this, like all their games on Steam were going to be on sale.
Yeah. Okay. I must have missed that. But yeah, I ended up buying it and I haven't even started it yet. I installed it. But yeah, single player games take me a really long time. Resident Evil 4 is like the original GameCube game, is one of my favorite video games of all time. So I know I'm going to play it, but it's a single player game. So I'm going to wait a bit because there was a DLC story that came originally with the PS2 port of Resident Evil 4 where you play as Ada Wong. And that isn't in the remake yet. And Mercenaries mode isn't in the remake yet. So by the time I probably get to it, I'll have lots of content to get through. But I played the demo and it was incredible. It was everything I wanted. So, and I've only heard good things about it. So yeah, I can't wait. I'm going to eventually play it, but multiplayer games always get in the way.
I understand. Yeah. Right. Recently I've been playing, I am normally the same way, but recently I've been playing a lot of Mountain Blade 2 Bannerlord again.
Oh yeah. You love that game.
Which is a game. Yeah. You know, it's a game that I love, but I also think it's genuinely boring a lot of the time.
Yeah. The way you said it, you were like, it's a game. It's a game.
It's like, listen, it's just so sandboxy and sometimes so slow paced that it's just kind of boring. But like the feeling of rushing across the steps on your horse with your lance and getting a dude.
Yeah.
Feels great. You know, it's just like the in-between stuff that's boring. So, you know, I end up just cheating my way to the top. And just having big glorified battles. I don't care. I just input console commands and go nuts.
Just go nuts.
Yeah, I mean, like, look,
whatever's fun for you, right? Whatever's fun for you. Those big games, like open world games, I need to have something to continuously like pull me in. Like, did you ever finish Halo Infinite?
Nah.
The campaign was like an open world FPS campaign. It was so boring because everything looked the same. Like I beat the campaign just because I want it. Like I've beaten every Halo game, but
yeah,
God, that campaign sucked. That campaign was just so bad.
I just got real bored.
And we played the multiplayer a lot, but then there were all these technical issues and big team battle wasn't working. And then we were all just kind of let's play Battlefield now. And we were playing Battlefield 4 for a while. And then 2042 came out. And now honestly, 2042 is an incredible game. Like I said, it's nothing special, but like it is it's a great game. It's incredible. It's a functional Battlefield game. They have the classes in it. They're supporting it, and 64v64 people, and it's just chaos and low stakes, and I can't complain with that. And plus, like when we played in the Asians Represent server, it's just a lot of fun. Speaking of which, like I had brought this up earlier and I had it on like the agenda. We had actually put off recording this episode until the D&D Direct, thinking that we would get some like big news that we would talk about. What did you think of it? Did you watch the whole thing?
I watched parts of it, or I just kind of caught up with like the back end, the articles where everyone, you know, every news site that's applicable.
Yeah, we're talking about it. What'd you think?
You know,
just a lot of stuff about the movie. D&D Minecraft seems kind of cool. Honestly, I'm surprised it didn't happen yet.
I like that D&D is coming to Minecraft. I think that's cool. It makes sense. Yeah. Do I like that Minecraft is coming to D&D, even if it's in the form of a free, even if it's free? I don't know. Like, if you look at the artwork, too, for those five monsters... I don't know why they're so grayed out. They just have a ton of gray on them, and it's like all the color got leached out of the characters. And so it's a weird choice. You know, but it's like, I don't know. It's just strange. Like, I don't think it's bad strange. It's just like perplexing strange. I read them and they seem cool, but they're not mind-blowing me with like anything new, it feels like.
I'm trying to figure out where this gray is coming from. Like, I'm looking at some screenshots right now from a Polygon article, and I don't know, it looks, I mean, the Displacer Beast looks very gray, but like, I don't know, it looks all right to me. Like, I'm very curious about the experience. Is it just going to be like a full-fledged D&D campaign? Like, how much have they recreated
Sorry. I don't mean the artwork of D&D in Minecraft, but the Minecraft artwork for D&D for the stat blocks. The D&D artwork of like the creeper and shit like that.
I see.
It's just super gray for some reason.
Okay.
I don't quite understand why.
I like secretly hope that, I mean, they said that, you know, it's a full D&D experience and they actually made Candlekeep in Minecraft.
Okay, so now it's kind of lit.
Yeah, it looks cool. It looks kind of cool. Like, can you do it in multiplayer? Like, I'd play the shit out of it.
I'm sure you can. There's no way you can't.
Like, I would absolutely play this. Do you know, like, I would lose my mind if, I mean, they said that they made Candlekeep. Did they make the Temple of the Immortal Lotus? Can I literally experience the adventure that I wrote in Minecraft? Like,
that'd be kind of cool.
I'd freak out. It'd be so cool to see that. So, like, I am very optimistic about that. Honestly, that was a big highlight for me. Like, the D&D movie, I can't wait to see it. I'm glad to hear that it's, like, getting really great reviews. I'm going to go watch it. But I haven't been to a movie in, like, since before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And the first movie back is going to be John Wick 4. I'm going to see John Wick 4 first. And I actually have plans to go see it on my mom's birthday. My mom wants to go see it. So the entire family is going to go see John Wick.
Oh, yeah, you told me about that.
I can't fucking wait for John Wick 4. And then I'll watch the D&D movie.
This Friday night, I'm supposed to watch, because I've not seen 3 somehow.
You haven't seen John Wick 3?
I don't know why. I don't know why. Because you know what's funny, too, is because I place John Wick 1, 2, and 3 as my top 3 action movies all time.
Well, you haven't seen 3.
Without ever seeing 3, because I believe in it.
So John Wick 3 is so good that you didn't even have to go see it.
No. So
the idea of John Wick. So basically, I want to know your top 5 action movies then. If your top 5 action movies in no particular order are John Wick 1, 2, and 3, what are the other two? You also haven't seen John Wick. That blows my mind that you haven't seen John Wick 3. First of all, that fact alone blows my mind. And then on top of that, it's in your top 5.
Yeah, with how much I talk about John Wick.
Like, okay, what are the other two in your top 5 then? Like, what are they?
I don't know. Unsolved Mysteries? No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. What are my other two?
Like, would you just put all of John Wick, or could you say?
Yeah, I'm reserving that for John Wick 4 and 5.
Or would you say your top 5 action movies of all time, just John Wick?
Yeah, my favorite, my top 5 action movies in no particular order are John Wick 1, John Wick 2, John Wick 3.
Maybe John Wick 3. Maybe John Wick 4. What about Ballerina, the upcoming spinoff of John Wick?
Ain't John Wick.
It ain't John Wick. Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see John Wick 4. I can't. You haven't seen John Wick 3. We talk about this all the time.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
That hurts.
Listen, but I'm supposed to watch it this Friday night. So, like,
okay. Well, I know.
All I know about John Wick 3 is that there's like horses and katanas. That's all I know. So it's not like I even know it by osmosis. I really have not seen it, and I've not seen any media that talks about it. Like, I really skipped by that.
It's like you avoided John Wick 3 spoilers because you didn't want it to be spoiled for you, and then you just never went to actually watch it.
Yeah, it's great.
My soul hurts.
Listen, shout out, you know?
My soul hurts. I'm thinking about like what my top 5 action movies are, and I don't think I could like put them in order. I would put the John Wick franchise as one. Put the John Wick franchise as one. John Wick would
if
be
you
up
had
there.
To name if you had to name so far the best John Wick movie to you.
Ooh, I mean the first
out,
one is
out really... of the out of the three that are in my heart.
Three that are in your heart, two of them are in your mind.
Yeah, two are in my mind, and the second one is the best.
The second one has the best action, I think. Well, no, actually, yes. The third one has some incredible action. There's this action sequence with Halle Berry and Keanu in Morocco that involved dogs, and it's really good. It's really fucking good. But I think it's really good because of the dogs in that scene, and it was kind of novel. I think John Wick 2, the catacomb scene and the lead up to it was incredible. But to me, that entire scene just felt like a Terran Tactical ad. with the way he was just like wearing his like three gun gear. I thought it was incredible. I thought it was cool. I thought it was interesting seeing like the bulletproof suits. But I think John Wick 3 had like the best action sequences from, I don't know. I don't think I could rank them. They're all good in their own way.
Listen,
which is why I grouped them into one.
I just love Keanu Reeves and Common shooting at each other.
That's that in D&D, you could do that. And everybody's just rolling and nobody's hitting. And everybody's just rolling D20s and nobody's hitting. That's exactly what that scene is.
Yeah. It's
okay,
great.
I think I know my top five. No particular order.
Okay.
John Wick franchise is one of the five.
Okay.
Hard Boiled and the movies of John Woo are also one of the top five. They're incredible. They're incredible. And I mean, I'm talking like Face Off, Hard Boiled, The Killer, Better Tomorrow. I love John Woo movies. I have a big John Woo DVD collection, actually.
Sure.
But I would rank Hard Boiled as my favorite John Woo movie because there is this incredible shootout that takes place at the start of the movie in this like dim sum restaurant. It's so good. We'll have to watch Hard Boiled if you haven't seen it. I'm assuming you haven't seen it.
No, of course not.
This is why we don't have a movie podcast because
John Wick.
So
hello,
John Wick, Hard Boiled / the movies of John Woo. Then I would have The Raid, the Indonesian film, The Raid.
Sure. Okay.
Okay. Have you seen that?
I've seen all the important parts, which are the action sequences. Listen, I don't watch movies. I don't watch that many movies.
Damn it. So it'd be The Raid. The action sequences from like The Raid 2 were incredible, but there was something that really scrappy about the production of the first Raid movie, plus Mike Shinoda doing the music, that made it really special in my mind. So that's three. So John Wick, Hard Boiled. So John Wick franchise, John Woo's movies, and with Hard Boiled as like the masterpiece in my mind. The Raid 1 and 2 are like incredible movies. Then I think a part of me would want to put like Enter the Dragon up there. But I think if I were to pick like a martial arts movie, I might actually pick one that has stuck with me for a really long time. And it's like, I think it's Police Story 4. It's a Jackie Chan movie.
Okay.
Where he goes to Australia and he fights a shark.
Mm-hmm.
But the films of Jackie Chan, although Police Story 1 has the most incredible stunts ever, he got like third degree burns on his hand sliding down a pole.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
Incredible stunts. You know what? I'm gonna put Police Story 1. So the first Police Story movie there, and then I think the next one I would add is I want to say like Everything Everywhere All at Once, but to me it's not an action movie. It's like if I were to pick like a sci-fi movie, I think we could debate whether or not that was an action movie.
Like, it is a movie that undeniably has action.
Yeah.
But the action's not the core of the story.
I just picked Die Hard. I think I just picked Die Hard. And I don't know if this is, like, a really vanilla top five, right? Like, in no order. Again, like, John Wick, Hard Boiled, Die Hard, The Raid, and, like, maybe Police Story 1 or Enter the Dragon.
Okay. Here's my top five in order. From fifth place to first.
Okay, John Wick 5, John Wick 4, John Wick 3, 2, 1.
Hold on.
Okay. Oh, but what about Predator?
John Wick 5.
Of course.
John Wick 4.
Uh-huh.
John Wick 3.
Oh, in your heart.
John Wick 2.
In your mind.
Sniper Special Ops featuring Steven Seagal.
I introduced my partner to Steven Seagal movies a while ago. Like I said, you know what, Sarah, we're going to watch. Yeah. We're going to watch Under Siege. And it's like the goo. It's so goofy. And
made goofier by the fact that none of it's trying to be goofy. None of it's.
No, he takes himself so seriously.
He's so serious.
So serious. Oh, you know what's another movie that might be my top five? Ong Bak. Ong Bak.
Mm.
That you haven't seen it, have you?
No. I did, yeah, but I didn't.
I would call you out on that shit.
I ummed and nodded.
Oh, Ong Bak, that movie is fucking incredible. And then, yeah, and I think there are other movies that could like be like a thriller, and I don't know if we'd pick a thriller to go in like an action movie.
Sure, yeah.
But Ong Bak would definitely be in there. Oh, Ong Bak might actually knock out. I don't know. I have to think about this. But yeah, those are my top five.
Oh, yeah.
God, I love action movies. How do we get here? Oh, yeah, we were talking about D&D Direct and the D&D movie and how we both haven't seen it yet, and we haven't seen John Wick 4 yet, and you haven't seen John Wick 3, even though it's in your top five. Listen, favorite.
Yeah, Friday, probably. What if I just don't? What if I watch chapter 1 and chapter 2? I clearly have time to watch chapter 3, and then I just don't. Yeah, what if I just skip it entirely?
Just go watch it. Oh God! And then you just write a fanfic.
Yeah. That's my chapter three.
I mean, John Wick 4 has some incredible, like, the cast is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Like I am very, very excited to see Donnie Yen in John Wick, but I am even more excited to see Scott Adkins.
Yeah,
in a John Wick movie, he's wearing like the fat suit, and he's playing this like Eastern European gangster. Like I really want that role to put him in front of like a bigger audience, because he is like the king of direct to DVD action. Like dude is so good. He's been in some like high profile things, but never as like a lead or never in a very prominent role. So I really hope Scott Adkins is like a standout in that movie.
Speaking of like action stars and stuff like that, and just like stunt oriented people, you know, right. I have finally seen my first thing with Louis Tan in it.
What was it?
It's Shadow and Bone season 2. Just came out on Netflix.
Oh, is he? I didn't watch season 1.
Yeah, he's in it. Nah, it's season 1's good. Season 2? I don't know. I'm halfway through and it feels very all right.
It's like we said, it's like I like looking at Louis Tan, but Louis Tan's not in a lot of good things. He's good looking, but he's not in a lot of good movies.
Which really sucks, because I really loved season 1.
Right.
I'm happy with season 2.
An issue with racism in it?
And it just feels fine. Yeah, because like, what's her face? The main character.
Like they made it all like the actress is mixed, right? And then they made it up. They kind of wrote in some more racism.
Yeah, is like fantasy Russian. And in this world of Shadow and Bone, the fantasy China is called Shu Han. And okay. I don't know. In the books, if I understand it correctly, I've never read them, but if I understand them correctly, in the books, her ethnicity or race is never mentioned. It's just kind of presumed that she's basically just like just Russian.
Yeah.
Alina is her name. And in the show, she is played by Jessie Mei Li, who is, I believe, half Chinese. And the character is now half Chinese, canonically in the show.
Right.
You know, but then they make it like a big deal and they just kind of bring it up all the time out of nowhere. Like out of nowhere. It's just like,
do you think it's one of those
a normal interaction? And then suddenly, but I can tell by your eyes. And you're like, what?
Do you think do you think they did that because they were like, oh, but like people are going to say that this character is canonically whatever this fantasy Russia is. And then, so they tried to like justify the casting. Do you think that's why they did it?
I think it's because they wanted to make a like uplifting or fighting against racism story.
I overcame.
That wasn't necessary. I think combating racism in this case could have just been left at like, we have this character who's awesome and who's half Asian or half Shu Han or whatever, half Chinese. And we leave it at that. Like it is okay sometimes to just leave it at that. You know, like
yeah. I don't know.
But it just felt very forced. You know.
I'm glad you watched a Louis Tan thing, though. I'm glad you finally Tan, saw a thing.
He kicked people real good.
He has kicks real good. Really, he kicks real good.
He has this, and I don't know about the historical nature of it. Maybe it's a real deal thing. I don't know. But he does have what is basically a katana length hilt. with maybe a third of the blade. It's so small, and I don't understand it. Oh. So he's wielding it, and his hands are like this far apart, right? They're like maybe a foot and a half, 2 feet apart, and then a blade that's like maybe like a foot and a half long. It's just very strange.
Oh, interesting. Is it a? It might be I think it's a Nagamaki.
Maybe. Like I said, I don't know the historical nature, but
Nagamaki. I think that could be it, because Nagamaki have like a really long handle and like a blade that's like almost as long as the handle. I think that might be it.
Nah.
That's not it.
Or
do you think it's like a fantasy version of it?
I could see it being that. I don't know for sure. It's possible. But okay. It did look silly in big, burly Louis Tan arms.
I think it's a Nagamaki, because I've seen like replicas, and I'm gonna pull up some pictures that I that sound exactly like what you're describing.
I'm trying to look up photos of him and Shadow and Bone.
But the last thing I wanted to ask you was, what were your thoughts on the D&D Beyond VTT demonstration? Say with AR.
I did not see much except for some screenshots, so I don't know.
You didn't watch it.
It just, from what I did see, it seems interesting. I am worried about like
accessibility,
or running into like the issue of combating the system. You know,
well, one of the things that they were really, I think they were really clear about when they were communicating. They were really clear to communicate that the if you want to like bend the rules or skip things, you should be able to do it with this VTT.
Sure.
Like if you're Mead, you don't track HP. but yeah, they were clear about that. For me, it's just I mean, it looks incredible. It looks like Talespire, but better. Like they haven't showcased really how you build maps, but the maps look cleaner than Talespire. If you can build them faster, that would be incredible. But yeah, my concerns are really about accessibility and how they're going to monetize it. Like, obviously, access to the VTT is going to come with a subscription. So can one person run the VTT and just have others watch? Or does everybody have to, you know, have a subscription of the same tier? Or what happens if one person has access to content that the others don't? Does the DM have to have like all of the content? Or what if, like, you know, you're a high tier subscriber and I'm not, but I'm the DM? Or do you have to host and then give me host? Like, I'm very curious about how that's going to work, as well as the technical requirements, right? Because like everybody in the video, shout out to Mackenzie, we're using like what appear to be like high powered laptops, like gaming laptops.
Sure.
So is this thing just going to chug along? Like if you're running like an old PC, or will it be browser based? Will it work on Mac? Like, I know that certain browsers can't even handle Foundry VTT. Like, you have to turn off hardware acceleration on Chrome to get Foundry to work. Like, what's going to happen with this VTT? I'm really worried that you're going to need a high end rig to be able to just have that fluid experience. And even then, when they were showing it, it was like dropping frames when the dice were rolling on the VTT.
Yeah. And like, you know, I have, like many, especially over the pandemic, you know, I have had the fair share of suffering when it comes to like trying to run the game online, and someone has a dookie potato computer.
Yep.
And they're lagging, they have bad internet, you know. You know, and if their internet is bad enough where some of my friends can barely handle Discord properly, where it's just the internet's bad, how are they going to handle all the upload and download of that game? You know, like, there are so many new loops to have to jump through.
Like, is it going to be like close all of your tabs, have nothing else on, just have D&D Beyond? Like, can you imagine?
Am I supposed to role play a tender moment between these characters while like one of them is rubber banding across the screen? Yeah.
Or you have this moment and somebody just starts interacting and like breaks the map, and everybody just falls below the map. God.
Yeah. And like, at the end of the day, it looks cool.
Yes.
It'll probably be cool. It's just that I think the question is, who will it be able to be cool for?
Yeah, right? And like what is going to be accessible? Like, do you need a full subscription to access it at all? Is it going to be a free version? Can you do you have to, like, how are they going to monetize maps? Can people monetize their own maps? I might have missed that. But is there going to be a marketplace? Like, look at what Epic has done with Fortnite and Unreal. Like, you can build your own games now using Unreal with Fortnite assets, and anybody can monetize. And I was just watching a video on this, and people can get, I think it's 40% cut from anybody, any purchase of their module on the marketplace. Yeah. Like, what's this going to look like? I mean, with Epic, it's free. Anybody can download it. Like, it's 45 gigs. I'm literally downloading it tonight because I want to see if I can make stuff with it. I don't play Fortnite, but using this AAA engine to actually make your own games using assets that are already made seems like a really cool exercise. But how will that work on D&D Beyond? I really don't know. I am very curious. I have a lot of questions, but I do have some hype. Like, it looks cool. I'm glad. It's exactly what I thought it was going to look like. But I really want to know the technical requirements. I want to know how it's going to be monetized.
Yeah. Really, and at the end of the day, you know, when they pulled together that reel, you know, to show off everything, they picked out the best moments, not the worst moments. Of course. You know, so if I there may be issues even during that recording session where there were, you know, glitches and just really bad frame drops is all I you know, that we just don't see yet, you know. But once it's out into the public and people are using it, I mean, they'll find every little busted thing about it, you know.
I really hope they do some sort of like community QA, like do it the way like Blizzard did Diablo 4. Just like be like, hey, free weekend, anybody can try it, go nuts, we'll collect feedback. Like, they should treat it like a video game.
And I think it would do well to put some of that, I guess, power into the community's hands about the direction of it. Especially because, the OGL. You know, WotC lost so much faith when it came to the OGL situation, among many other things, you know.
Yeah.
But the OGL really is what kind of blew the top off of the whole thing. I think it would be good of them to really be directed by a lot of community feedback. That doesn't mean that, you know, the community should be making all the decisions. Any individual community member doesn't necessarily have all the answers, nor do they understand fully what the problem is and anything. But, like, you know, the community has a voice, and I know that they probably want to be heard at this point. You know, we always do, but especially now, you know.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, I don't want them to not do any public testing and just release it and then just have it be terrible, right? Yeah. They got to do some sort of early access, maybe some sort of timed betas.
Yeah, some dev vlogs or something like that.
Yeah, like maybe you get in touch with like writers. Things,
updates.
Like talk to streamers, talk to writers, see what, you know, they think of the tool. I mean, maybe this is something they'll do at the Creator Summit. I don't know. I'm attending virtually. I'm attending, so we'll see. And like, I will have lots of questions about how it's going to be monetized and what the technical requirements are.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see. I'll report back to you in the next episode of No Dice, No Problem.
Hell yeah.
But I just, I have high hopes, but I'm tempering my expectations. Now, I wanted to ask you a question. And
okay. I'm scared.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question. It's actually something that, you know, kind of came from our patrons as well.
Okay.
You and I talk about, like, at the beginning of this episode, we were talking about, you know, survival games, like, but mostly video games, right?
Yeah.
Would you play a post-apocalyptic survival tabletop RPG?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Okay. Or have you already?
I have not. I have not to my memory. I have always wanted to. I am very, very excited for The Walking Dead TTRPG to come out.
My God, this Walking Dead TTRPG. They have made like 669, almost 670,000 Canadian dollars off this RPG, and they got 6 days left.
Yeah.
Like, incredible.
I may not back it because I'm broke, but I am very excited for it because I love zombie movies. I love zombie anything. I'm really, really into all that stuff. And yeah, I would love to play something like that.
So you've watched, so you love zombie movies, but is this in theory or do you actually watch them like John Wick?
Oh no, I've watched, I've watched basically all of the, like, well, like the George Romero, like of the Dead series, you know, I have watched every,
have you seen Zombie 2?
No.
You have. You haven't seen Zombie 2?
I don't know, man.
Okay, so Zombie 2, Zombie without the E. It's an Italian zombie movie, and nothing to write home about when it comes to like the actual plot, but there's a really famous scene where a zombie fights a fucking shark. Now, this is a movie
that's fun.
Yeah, this movie is incredible for that scene alone. Literally, the shark's like ripping off the zombie's arm. This movie was made in 1979. And they had a zombie fighting a shark underwater. Such a cool movie. It's a cult classic.
That's fun.
For zombies. I'm with you. I love zombie movies. But yeah, dude.
Yeah. Anything like Rec, Quarantine, you know, any, just whatever.
I love how you said, I love how you said anything like Rec, Quarantine. Quarantine's just the American remake of Rec.
Yeah. Rec is better. But, you know, still.
Rec 2? Genuinely
turn into, like, a just zombie stuff is good stuff no matter what. Like, you know.
Just Jennifer Carpenter in stuff. Quarantine. Did you watch Rec 3? Did you see Rec 3?
I don't think I have.
The wedding.
I think I've seen bits and pieces. Like, because I'll get on these, like horror movie tangents where I'll like, and I'll just see like a clip on YouTube. Yeah. I'll just like see a clip on YouTube and then that'll lead to just another clip and shit like that. So I don't think I've seen it, but I've seen like parts of it because of that. I've seen Rec 1 and 2 though.
Rec 2 is such like both great movies. Rec 2 genuinely scared me. I think
I have
like a huge collection of, it's weird, of John Woo DVDs and zombie DVDs. I have multiple Xerox boxes full of zombie DVDs, and Rec is like stands out as like one of my favorite zombie movies of all time. It is
now
absolutely incredible. Like,
do
like,
we want to get into this whole thing of like
what is a zombie?
What is a zombie?
Because I don't. With Rec, like I don't think we should. I think that could be a whole other episode because it's demonic possession.
Like, yeah, that's like spread through a bite, right? Something like that.
Kind of, but then in like it's Rec like, 3 yeah. is more of a zombie movie. It's less of a found footage film though, like the first two Rec.
Yeah.
And then I think they went
I
back
love found footage Rec films. 4.
I think they're hit and miss. But like I love The Walking Dead, like to circle back to this TTRPG. And I think, you know, the Year Zero engine is like the perfect way to do this.
Yeah, I've never played in that system, so I don't know what it's like.
Who played Coriolis?
Oh, okay. It's great.
Yeah.
Listen, like I can't keep them all straight. Listen, there's so many systems and engines out there.
Yeah, but it's like nice and streamlined, right? And I mean, they've proven that you can do things like base building with Mutant Year Zero. Combat can be lethal, like in Coriolis. I really think it's going to be a good game, and they have a track record of just making good shit. And even though, like, The Walking Dead, like the main series, that like. The TV show, at least, I know is coming to an end, right? I know there are like spinoffs like Fear the Walking Dead and stuff like that.
It is over.
It's over, now. Right? Isn't there going to be another like main series that's not Fear the Walking
there
Dead?
There are two spinoffs, three spinoffs.
Like Rick is not really dead. Oops.
Yeah. So, whoops.
Sorry, watch.
There's a spinoff for Rick and Michonne.
Right.
There is a spinoff for Negan and Maggie.
Okay.
Called Dead City, where they're in New York City, I believe.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, I'm hopeful for them. Like, listen, The Walking Dead show is probably, I think, having watched all of it, it is a lot of booty that has these great moments of beauty. You know? Like, but, you know, because, like, there's just there are just moments like with any long form TV show that goes on for a long time where there's just drivel, you know?
Yeah, they just like kind of drag it on.
God, do I love that drivel, you know? I love Walking Dead. I did not like Fear the Walking Dead, though. Fear the Walking Dead got too wild too fast.
Did you like not Walking Dead, but did you watch Kingdom?
I did. Yeah.
Did you like, I fucking love Kingdom.
Kingdom is I think top three all time for me.
Oh, Kingdom is just
zombies of anything. It's top
Kingdom
three.
Is so good, and it's what you could, if you did like low fantasy, if you did a TTRPG, it would be Kingdom.
It's I would play. If someone came out with a Kingdom TTRPG, I'd play it instantly.
You know, there's a video game.
It
looks terrible. It looks terrible.
Oh well, you know,
it looks terrible. Okay. But Kingdom, like, first of all, historical Korea.
Yeah,
incredible stuff, right? You have like swords, bows and arrows. You have explosives. Swords.
So far, you're only describing Walking Dead.
Sorry, that's true.
They have bows. They have explosives
and guns, and guns too, actually. Shit. But like, I think the story behind like the plant in Kingdom and like the court drama and the intrigue, I think is just makes for a, it is a D&D campaign, right? It's a D&D campaign. And then the movie also good, also really good.
Now I'm just imagining Daryl Dixon
in historical Korea, period,
like historical Korea club.
He still got his vest.
Yeah, not shaved. He looks exactly like he would in any particular
with his crossbow with his elbow really high. God. I want good survival TTRPGs. Like, I'm going to buy The Walking Dead. I don't know if I'll back it, mostly because, like, I won't play it right away. So when it comes out in stores, I'll get it in stores.
Yeah, it's funded. It's fine. It'll come out.
It'll come out.
Successful.
They don't need my money.
It'll be in stores.
Yeah.
They don't need us to back them.
And like, I know that I'm going to play The Walking Dead RPG because I'll definitely play it with you.
Hell yes.
And I know we can assemble a group of people to play it. Can you imagine if we did like a Walking Dead RPG, like an actual Planet Asians represent that was just Walking Dead? I think that'd be cool.
Yeah. I think it'd be great. I have always loved the idea of like running a home game, like here in St. Louis. Yeah, where we like break out like maps of St. Louis and we like
I've done it.
Where like if a player goes like, hey, you know that store off of Grand? And I go, I fucking do. Boom. I want to go there. And I'm like, all right, let's figure it out.
Yeah. Like, do you know the End of the World RPG series?
I don't.
Okay, so Fantasy Flight published four End of the World. There's four books: Zombie Apocalypse, Wrath of the Gods, Alien Invasion, and Revolt of the Machines. I have Zombie Apocalypse, and I did exactly what you're pitching. A group of friends, we basically got the book, and a part of it is actually making yourself as a character. And we kind of were like, okay, you have to talk about your strengths and weaknesses, and everybody kind of debates to make sure you're actually being truthful about how you'd actually fare during the apocalypse.
Okay.
But a part of character creation involved us basically emptying our pockets and being like, this is what we're starting with.
That's fun.
And like, you know, me, like with my everyday carry, I was like, okay, I got a knife, I got a multi-tool, I got a flashlight, like I got paracord. But like, it was a lot of fun.
I have a phone. I have my keys. Phone. I have a wallet.
And like, we went and then we had a paper map of Toronto and we were literally like highlighting and drawing on zones where like we had cleared out this area. We could go here. These are the routes that we could take. And then we would go on Google Street View and Google Earth to talk about like rooftop, like access to things. And it was,
that's fun.
It was so much fun.
Then you guys started arguing about like the length of the hallway in the bathroom at McDonald's. So then you drove to that McDonald's and were like, see, I told you.
I would have survived in this McDonald's for at least a day.
I had an extra 5 feet of movement. I could have moved here and I would have survived. Asshole.
We should, honestly, I think that would be a really fun game to play. Maybe we should try End of the World.
It looks cool. And like the artwork is dope.
It's got like a whole like campaign inside it. Like you can go through the whole campaign as well, or you could do it in your own city. It was just a lot of fun.
Where you survive the zombie apocalypse, and then after that, you have to survive the Wrath of the Gods, and it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Season 2, Wrath of the Gods.
Season 2. It's like Supernatural. It just gets bigger and worse every single season.
Like a shonen anime.
Yeah.
I think that the cool thing about post-apocalyptic RPGs is that you don't have to think about these grand stories, right? It's just like, hey, sure, we're trying to survive, yeah, and we're trying to escape, right? Of course, there are games like, you know, Dread, where you know you're probably going to die, or 10 Candles, where you're guaranteed to die. And so you just kind of have to have a really simple objective, like, hey, we're going to get to the harbor, and we're going to get a boat, and we're going to go to, off of Toronto, there's like Center Island, there are like these residential islands just off of Toronto. On Lake Ontario. It's like, we're going to get to Center Island and that's going to be our story. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something cool about that because it really gives the players agency over what's happening. The GM, it really isn't like kind of pushing or railroading. It's just like, hey, how do we want to respond? And setting it in the real world, while it does come with a whole bunch of, I mean, there are complications there. Like you have to deal with real world issues. But of course.
Yeah. And you have to deal with like the increased level of like, well, actually,
bringing yourself to the table as well, right? If you're playing myself.
Yeah, imagine we have all been at the table playing a TTRPG, like let's just use D&D as the example.
Sure.
And, you know, an even better one, we're playing Star Wars RPG. You know, okay. We're playing Edge of the Empire or something.
All right.
And one player knows a lot more about the lore than everyone else, possibly even the GM or whatever.
Yep.
And so you run into the, well, actually.
Well, here's what I would do.
But imagine that, but you're playing the real world where we all have a lot of that knowledge.
Well, here's what you do. You basically say everybody's on vacation in a city that they don't know that well.
That's pretty good.
Right, imagine if we did on Agents Represent. It's like the Agents Represent crew went to a convention and an apocalypse, like a zombie apocalypse, an outbreak occurred during this convention. Yeah. And now we got to survive. I think that would be really interesting. And we could just
and if your character dies, you have to pack up early and leave the convention.
I was just saying, what if we did an actual play where this was the story?
It starts at Breakout Con.
And all of the people who like our show just get killed by zombies? No.
Yeah. We're just throwing people into the meat grinder.
Our
treasured friends and compatriots and colleagues just
but if you got like, you'd be like, oh, if you're a patron, we can be like, submit yourself as an NPC. I push this person into the zombies and run. Describe your the end of you as an NPC.
I grab Mark and throw him in front of me.
Love you, Mark.
Love you, Mark.
But I think if folks like this idea, let us know, because we'll definitely do that. I think that'd be fun, even if a one shot, like it's just like a convention and then everybody dies.
and then we print out a series of shirts saying I died at Breakout Con.
Or I survived. We could have pins.
Yeah. And we give the red shirts that say I died at Breakout Con to everyone who died in the actual play. And we give green shirts to everyone who lived through.
Oh my God, this could, dude.
That should be lit.
We could do a live show and we could have audience participation. Like, just say this happened like at a con.
That'd be great.
This is a dope idea.
This is incredible.
We should do this. Like, what? Or, okay, another thing that I think could be cool.
We're cooking.
Is if we, did you ever see, what was that? Have you seen, I think it's called I Am Alive. Yeah.
That's a Korean film, right?
It's a TV.
Was it a show?
Oh, it's just called Alive. It's just called Alive. Hashtag Alive. It was a Korean zombie movie, but it's about this
shut-in
in his apartment complex. What do you think that we could do some sort of live play?
That was pretty good.
Or some sort of semi-scripted actual play where everybody's kind of remote. And it's just called No Dice, All Problems. Like, I think that'd be kind of cool.
That would be interesting.
I think that would be neat, right? If we went and did some sort of remote actual play or some sort of series where we're all at our computers and there's an apocalypse happening.
Dude, it would be interesting to almost do like a radio theater thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like the power is still on. The internet
is podcasting and through the internet, apocalypse?
Kind of. Or maybe it's just a group of friends who live in different places and they're like sheltering in place during this outbreak that's happening.
Right.
And they're talking to each other, and it's almost like World War Z, the book.
The book. Where there's a whole section of the book that's just like the plot of Alive, where it's that shut-in.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Where we do that. You know? And like, what if, you know, four kind of moments ahead, one of the characters just never logs on ever again. And they just never know what happens to him. You know? And they don't find out until way later in the series, when one of them braves the streets, tries to stop by,
sees them as a zombie.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh,
that'd be cool.
That would be cool. That feels like a massive undertaking.
Huge undertaking. But I think like if we did some sort of like one shot zombie apocalypse thing, I think that could be fun.
I will never say no to zombie apocalypse anything. I'm always down.
I think every person on the cast would have to be like a big fan of the genre.
Sure.
Big fan of the genre.
you like zombie apocalypses? Show me where you've been bitten.
I think that'd be really cool.
I think that'd be very fun.
We should look into this. Because I'm thinking you know, Train to Busan, except Train to Breakout.
God, what a great film.
Great movie. Sequel, kind of meh.
I heard it was meh before I watched it, so I just didn't bother.
Yeah, it's kind of meh. But yeah, Train to Busan, and it would be Train to Breakout, okay. We'll off air. We'll talk about this, but
okay.
I really like this idea of us doing some sort of one-shot actual play around the apocalypse. I think it could be really cool. We can bring something into it.
Could even do a short series of one-shots where it is sort of like World War Z, the book, where it's snapshots of events, you know? Or snapshots of different stories, right?
There was, I'm just going to look this up. So David Tennant, like Doctor Who, did a web series or a show during the height of COVID. And what was it called? I have to find it. But it was really cool because it was done over Zoom. Yes, it's called Staged. He did it with Michael Sheen, who was in Underworld. Did you ever watch Underworld?
I have not.
Dude, you gotta watch Underworld. The first movie is so good. Vampires versus werewolves. The vampires are all sexy and they have guns, and werewolves are equally sexy but disheveled. Fuck, it's so good. Okay. There's this scene with Kate Beckinsale. She's got her USP match pistols, and she's standing in this hallway, and there's these werewolves coming at her. She pulls out her guns with the match weights, and she just spins in a circle, shooting at the ground, and then it falls out underneath her. God, it's so cool. But in Staged, they did the whole thing. Like, it looks like it was done over Zoom, and it was just about like fictionalized versions of both of the actors dealing with the pandemic. And I wonder if we could do like a short web series or something, or
that would be dope.
Like
I'm in.
Like over Discord or something? Like make it look like Discord, and God, that'd be so cool.
Like an unbranded version of Discord.
Yeah, like I think that could just be really neat. And okay. Well, we have lots of ideas, but I want to talk more about like TTRPGs and stuff, because we got a lot of like questions from the community about like the apocalypse. Because we were like, we're gonna do a whole episode on surviving the apocalypse.
Daniel and Drew still cannot make up their mind if they want the topic to inform the
episode or just talk and then make the topic as they go.
What comes first, the topics or the title?
This one could have been Daniel and Drew talk about action movies. Except Drew hasn't seen half of them. He's only seen them in theory, so we can't do that.
I've seen them in my heart.
We could do Daniel and Drew write an action movie, and we can write an action movie.
We just as an episode. An action film.
Yo, that'd be so fun. I think we could do it too.
I think we could. I think we could hash through a real quick and dirty like outline of a script.
Yeah, I just think
a real shitty one.
I'll say it would be a real shitty one about like who's the main character, Joe Thunderdick or something like that.
Johnny Hotcock.
oh my god! But I think that could be a fun patron only thing. But yeah, I want us to get into some of these patron questions, but I love the idea of doing a post-apocalyptic TTRPG, not even just for content, but just for fun. Like, I like the idea of like making a character and planning out what we're going to do. Like, oh, we're low on water. Obviously there would have to be a lot of conversations about like, okay, are we going to factor in hydration and water? What about stress? What are like safety tools would be so important, especially if we're like playing ourselves. Like, what are some things we are not okay happening?
Sure.
I think that'd be a lot of fun. I think using End of the World would be a really good idea. And then, you know, down the line, Walking Dead when it comes out would be fun. I think you could do it with a lot of OSR games too, because a lot of OSR games track like harm and wounds that happen to your character. Even games like Delta Green track like stress, Call of Cthulhu too. But OSR games also factor in travel and exploration, which I think could be neat in a fantasy setting.
Because like Kingdom. I'm sure you can do a rules light zombie game. I'm absolutely confident that you could.
100%.
But I love the idea of like having to know if I have enough food.
Yeah. Or tracking. You know,
that doesn't mean I have to look. Yeah, that doesn't mean I have to look at the back of the can and actually count up the calories I need for the day. But just I like some of the extra inventory management, the risks of like, do I take this with me? Do I not? You know, I don't think most of us want to experience that level of realism and simulation within a zombie apocalypse game. But yeah. I do love the idea of like, we only have this much food. Should I take extra food with me because I could get stranded out there with no food? You know, or should, you know, but that will slow me down. Like, I like having to think about that kind of stuff.
I mean, you could track encumbrance, like Wandering Blades. We have an encumbrance system and it's like really straightforward. Everything, you have so many item slots that you can carry, right? And then if you had things like, a bug out bag, this adds to your, you know, carrying capacity. But maybe you have a carrying capacity and max weight, right? And so you could have slots. And then you kind of have to think, well, how much stuff can I carry? And does it limit my mobility? And certain types of backpacks will affect your, like, how your character actually functions. And then you could just use food for things like, okay, you need food to rest, right? You need X amount of food if you want to take, let's use the D&D equivalent of like a short rest. You need X amount of food to take a long rest. You need a certain amount of food and water to travel from like a certain distance. And you can make it really easy. Like, you could literally do a hex crawl and be like, to go from hex A to B, it requires like one hex over this much food and water, right?
Yeah.
And I think like, that would be really easy to do.
I would love to be presented with the option or like the choice within the game to be like, I'm going to choose not to eat today because I just ate yesterday and I need to try to stretch this food as long as possible.
Yeah, like I've got, you know, like we got in a fight, my health is low. I also think you would have to have a conversation about like, how can you heal? And I think the best way to do it would literally be hit points are not like really your health, but the threshold to which you will receive a real serious injury. So food can restore hit points, but medicine is required to restore wounds.
We can even just say it's like stamina or energy.
Stamina, energy, anything like that. Because that's what we're doing in Wandering Blades, right? Hit points are your kind of buffer. And then, yeah, so you would have, you could stretch foods used to rest and heal stamina, hit points, whatever, right? Medicines used to heal wounds, depending on the severity of the injury and whatnot. And then you also need food and water, or food and water can be honestly put to, I think they'd be separate. I think you'd have to have them separate. Water might be.
Yeah, when you can survive for, you know, many weeks without food potentially, but you can't survive more than like 3 or 4 days without water, like, You know, they just work on two different scales.
I think you would need to have systems in place, like really easy to use systems. Like you can't have like, you know, a list of, like your the equipment section of the player's handbook, but only on food. Like cup noodles gives you this much stamina.
Yeah,
like,
that's too much.
It's just like it would be worth this many foods.
Yeah, it would be one thing if it was a video game where they can calculate all that for you, but trying to look at like 5 pages worth of tables for every possible food item that could be there, that's just too much.
You would need to streamline the decision making, because it can't be like in Sons of the Forest where it's like, okay, well, I'm going to eat these cup noodles and then this energy bar and this MRE.
Yeah.
Like, if I was food value of X.
If I was running a zombie game, what I would try to say as the GM is basically like, you know, so while you're raiding this gas station, you find some ramen packs, you find some boxes of macaroni, you find some jars of tomato sauce, you find this and that will equal 2 units of food, you know?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then you go, okay, well, I only have 3 units of space left in my backpack. Okay, I'll just take it all. If I have to drop it, I'll drop it later.
Well, then you're talking about another system, which was like inventory. So like,
yeah.
Would it be like a one-to-one? Like,
but
one
yeah, but it would have to, inventory? It would have to interact. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just keep it super straightforward. Like a handgun versus like ramen noodles. Or like, is a rifle equal to that many units of ramen noodles?
Do you start like that? Playing Escape from Tarkov, where you have to Tetris things into place?
Well, what I would do is like in Mouse.
That would be fun. That would be fun. What? If you have a printout, printout of a grid that represents your backpack,
dude,
and look, you have literally, like. You hand as a GM, you hand them Tetris blocks, and you're like, if it don't fit, it don't fit. Like, you have too much stuff in your backpack.
Yeah, dude, like Mouse Ritter, like the character sheet in Mouse Ritter just has blocks, and you put stuff over the blocks. It's like, oh, this thing is 2 units, it covers 2 squares.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's how I would That'd do the inventory cool. there. And you could just literally write it down on a piece of paper or something. Or you could probably make like a simple, like, you could use a spreadsheet. Honestly, you could use a spreadsheet too if you wanted. Like, just to like, fill it in however you want, or like merge cells and then unmerge cells. You would have to track gear. You would have to track food and water, and food and water are basically currency for healing and travel.
Sure.
That's what I would do, because you would need to spend food and water to like go so far if you're walking, or like if you're driving cuts down the food and water cost of travel by X amount. Right. Yeah. I think that would be like really easy to do. Then you might want to track like stress and stamina and all of that. You would also want to make sure that the game isn't just about inventory management and crunching numbers, and you would just
that would get boring.
Like, it would get really boring. But I think you would want to make sure that it's relatively rules light. Like, I like the idea of having inventory management on top of the Year Zero engine. Like, I really hope that's what the Walking Dead RPG is. Because I don't want to have to
think
about
rules. There's no way they
don't
have some sort of inventory stuff.
You gotta. It like that's what people are expecting, because I want to think, okay, if I have this backpack, what is my carrying? My total carrying capacity is this.
Yeah.
Awesome. How many things can I put in there? God. This would be a really, really fun game to play. Just like kind of exploring, getting from point A to point B. I think that'd be a lot of fun. But that's it, dude. Do you want to answer some patron questions?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Okay, so let's go through all the apocalypse ones, actually. I want to start with Jeremy. Jeremy asked, what are your favorite post-apocalyptic settings or stories? And I think that could be like, I don't think that's like TTRPG. I think that's just like world settings. I think that's world settings. So I think for stories, I mean, we've talked about a whole bunch of incredible sort of apocalyptic stories. I mean, I don't count like Wreck as an apocalyptic story because it's contained within the apartment complex.
Sure.
But Train to Busan, Kingdom are all apocalyptic stories that we
Kingdom's
about.
Definitely in there.
Things that kind of get out of control.
You want to do like a top three?
We could do a top three. Yeah. I think Kingdom's up there. I wouldn't do Train to Busan as like a setting for me, but Kingdom is definitely up there. Do you have any?
Kingdom's in the top three. I don't know what place. Then John Wick Chapter 2.
Oh, yeah, John Wick Chapter 2. I mean, that could be John Wick Chapter 3. You haven't seen it.
No. Yeah, that's fair. Maybe zombies show up.
I mean, we did see John Wick in, was it at Resident Evil Vendetta? With Chris Redfield and Leon Kennedy, who are in that hallway, yeah. John Wicking all the zombies.
God. So definitely Kingdom.
Yeah.
I would say Walking Dead for me.
Okay.
It is by no means perfect. Often,
but what makes the setting stand out to you, other than it's just like, oh, zombies in America? Because you could say Walking Dead is really similar to the classic Romero zombies too, right? Because it's just zombies in America with all of America's issues. Like, what makes the Walking Dead universe different? Or what makes the setting your favorite compared to other zombie or post-apocalyptic movies set in the United States?
Honestly, I think partially it might end up being length, just because you get the most screen time with those characters, whereas most of these other...
But the question is about settings, or is it stories?
Yeah, it's not.
Because Jeremy did ask about stories. It's not, right? Like, is The Walking Dead like your favorite apocalyptic story?
Maybe.
Okay. I mean, that's fair. That's fair. But then we can't say that it's the setting, right? Because I think, for me, Kingdom is a good setting and story.
Sure, sure. If we're just vaguely doing top three zombie things, then it would be in the top three. But with the parameters of the question, I don't know if it fully makes it into it.
Because for me, if like top zombie movies, like Shaun of the Dead, 100% be there.
Ooh, Shaun of
the
Dead.
I might say that's like a story, but the setting, I don't care. I care about the characters and the story, right? Definitely Shaun of the Dead for stories. I might also add like The Road, like Cormac McCarthy's The Road. The movie is incredible. The book is also good. I also like I Am Legend.
I Am Legend's real good. I was also going to say, oh no, go ahead and continue.
Oh no, you go ahead. Go ahead.
I was also going to say 28 Days Later.
Oh yeah. So
because
like
that's like the first, at least for
Rage,
me.
Like the Rage zombie.
Yeah. The idea of like, because I didn't watch it when it came out. It came out in 2002. I was six. I did not watch it then.
oh, God.
But when I did watch it, it was the idea of like, zombies, but they run.
But they
run. Was like, you know, was a big change, I felt like. You know?
Did you watch the Dawn of the Dead remake?
Dawn of the Dead's the...
The Zack Snyder Dawn of the Dead movie. Right? Yeah, but the original one, is the Romero one. And then yes. Zack Snyder did the remake in 2004, years before, 28 Days Later came out. No, actually, no, it's after, because 28
Days Later is 2002.
2002, so then the Dawn of the Dead remake was 2004, so that came after. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, 28 Weeks Later was 2007.
Right. That has Jeremy Renner in it? 28 Weeks Later had starring Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, 28 Weeks Later, that's the one where they're trying to...
Very forgettable.
yeah, it's set in like a camp, right? Like they have some sort of refugee camp and like...
I vaguely remember.
I don't know. Killian Murphy fucking Killians it, you know, in 28 Days Later. I love that guy.
So,
shout out to Killian Murphy.
Okay, so you would say the 28 Days Later world with the rage-filled zombies where they run really fast.
I think it's dope. But also, I think it's like...
But also how it's transmitted, too, because there's that one scene where it drips into the guy's eye.
Yeah, super good.
Okay.
Super good.
I agree with you on that.
Part of my reason why it's one of my favorites is because, I am not a historian of zombie entertainment stuff. Maybe someone else did it before them, but for me, I feel like in the timeline of zombie films, 28 Days Later did so many game-changing things.
Yo, running zombies, I'm done. I'm done.
Yeah, like, I'm dead.
What about The Last of Us? Because I think we'd get roasted if we didn't talk about The Last of Us. I'll say from like the video game, with like cordyceps and spores. Things like
that.
They did it a little bit differently in the show.
I think it's very good. I think the only reason I don't put it into like a top three for me is because I've never played it because I didn't own a PlayStation. Yeah.
I thought Last of Us was really cool, but again, it's one of those things where I like the setting and I love the stories. I think it would be up there in my top three, but I don't know if we'd consider them zombies because are we talking about the undead?
I feel like they fill the zombie niche.
Okay, the loss of agency.
If we want to go with this, they fulfill the vibe.
Okay, yeah. So Last of Us would be another one in my top three, like Kingdom, Last of Us. Yeah. There's also a really good movie based on a book, the same name, called The Girl with All the Gifts. And it's got Gemma Arterton.
That sounds so familiar.
And it's a similar, like, dystopian future where a fungus is basically, you know, turn people into zombies. And they're also fast in that one too. But there's like a girl who's like kind of immune.
Isn't this the one where there isn't there like a bunch of kid zombies in this?
Yeah, there's like kids and they're like
I remember this. It was pretty good.
It's pretty good. Girl with All the Gifts, but it's very similar to like The Last of Us. I would say that so for me, still it's Kingdom, Last of Us, and then Shaun of the Dead for story. Last of Us for both story and setting. Kingdom for both story and setting. Those are my three.
For me, no particular order. Okay. No, actually, in this particular order. Kingdom.
Uh-huh.
28 Days Later.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll throw just a Sidewinder in there.
Okay.
Death Trooper from Star Wars.
Star Wars Death Trooper was such a cool story.
It was so good.
So good. Okay, I respect that.
I read that book way too young.
I remember when that came out. I was in undergrad when that came out. Yo, that's a throwback. Way to go. I agree with that. That
book is just incredible. Gave me so many nightmares.
Zombie Stormtrooper. It's Dead Space in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. We actually answered Jeremy's second question. If you guys were on the run, were to run End of the World, how would it go down and which of y'all would die first? Well, we talked about how we would run it and that we would love it. Who would die first? I mean, we asked this question before.
Listen. I'm a big boy.
I just think you're also unprepared, too. We were literally talking about, like, I've got bug out bags here. Dude, so my parents are like preppers, like in like real life. Like my parents, like, always into preparedness, always into making sure we got tons of water, power goes out, fill up the tub, get water. Always have stores, like my mom labels all of their like preserves and everything. Like my partner and I do the same too. Literally pandemic happened here and the fucking nerd in me was like, I've been preparing for this my whole life.
This is my moment.
This is my moment. And like, I already had all the toilet paper and all the water and literally everything. Like at the start of the pandemic, I had enough stuff here. Like Sarah and I had enough stuff here that we wouldn't have had to leave like the condo for like 2-3 months. Like ready.
Yeah, I'd probably die. Yeah, it's me.
We got bug out bags here. We're like ready to go. Like I've got like 3 days worth of food and water in here. I've got clothes. I got tools, first aid. I got everything. And then in our car, we have get home bags. So if something happens when we're away from home, we got a kit that's mobile that's designed for us to be able to get home to our stuff.
Listen, if the zombie apocalypse went down like today, tonight, knock on wood, I would zoom straight. Listen, I'm a parks employee. I'll go to the parks and I will zoom over to one of my workplaces, the historic Daniel Boone Hall. Come visit me. I don't really work there anymore. Visit, but don't visit me. I won't be there.
But not during the apocalypse.
No. If it's the apocalypse, do not go there. I do not want to see you. I will shoot you on sight. I do not play those games. That place has its own water supply. You know, it's got everything it needs. You know, it's out there in the boonies, you know, like,
look, I think both would stand a chance. I think we'd both stand a chance.
It's got multiple buildings all made out of stone. Not all, some of them are made of stone, but like the last, you know,
I think you got this. I think this is also an interesting story because, before we started talking, before we started recording, I was talking about how there was this study that was done by this website called rentola.ca. So it's a Canadian website where you can, I guess, find rental properties, like find an apartment or whatever. And they did like a, they collected all this data to basically identify what are like the worst places in Canada to be in the event of an apocalypse. And they did it based on five groups of data. So they had vulnerability. So this is like, I guess, population density, perceived physical mental health, number of visits to the REA, what that means. They had hideouts, average household size, if there's green space, housing vacancies, supplies, if there's like green areas, I guess. But I would also assume if they're like a transportation hub. Safety, crime rate, total firearms in Canada. Actually, there are a lot of firearms in Canada. Use of discharge, pointing, and total weapon violations, I guess, crime rate. And then mobility, like if there are literally places for you to hike and walk, like bike lanes and things like that. And Toronto, number 29. Number one in the worst place, I guess, or is this the safest? Let me just make sure. The best or worst cities? I guess the best city is Edmonton, I guess. If you look at Edmonton is number one. Toronto is all the way down on 29. I think Toronto's pretty bad, but at least we beat Montreal. But if you go to like, what was it? Like safety? It's like Saskatoon, number one. And like Toronto, number 11. We ain't that safe here. if you get like transportation, again, Edmonton, like it's like right in the middle of Canada. It makes total sense. Toronto's 15, though. We got lots of highways and bike lanes. Supplies, I honestly thought Toronto would be higher. But Guelph, Ontario is number one. Like in my mind, Guelph's like a university town. Same with Kingston, another university town. A lot of them like are like all in Ontario, though, which is really cool. Toronto, though, I don't even know where Toronto is there. Gotta keep scrolling. Toronto's number 29 there. Shelter, Toronto's number four. Housing's, you know, really expensive in Toronto. There are a fuck ton of condos. And then what's the Band-Aid icon? The Band-Aid icon is vulnerability. I feel like this one's extremely biased, too, because you're factoring in a lot of other things. But Toronto, surprisingly, is 35. I thought Toronto would be more vulnerable just because of like population density. But I guess they're factoring in healthcare and all of that.
Yeah, I'm looking at a list of U.S. cities all done by lawnlove.com. My favorite, the best place for your zombie apocalypse needs. And I've been scrolling for a while and I don't see St. Louis, but. Number seven, Springfield, Missouri. Pretty good.
Is that close? How close is that to you? Would you be able to get there?
It's like two, three hours drive.
Okay. So like triple or quadruple that in the event of the apocalypse.
Oh, yeah.
Highway's going to be clogged up. Probably going to have to walk. Fight your way over there.
Yeah.
But
for some reason, Orlando, Florida is number one. And I just do not agree.
People just going to be like hiding in the park using mascot costumes as armor. Yeah.
It's Orlando, Salt Lake City, Utah, Honolulu, Hawaii, Portland, Oregon, and then Colorado Springs, Colorado.
I could see Portland. Super green. A lot of cyclists. Yeah. Good infrastructure for transportation. You know what would be really interesting, though? If you did, like if you were doing like a TTRPG one shot and it was set in Florida. And somebody took Star Wars Galaxy's Edge and made that into a settlement. And that was their stronghold. And they went absolutely nuts and everything was just Star Wars. Like the Jedi Order will save you.
That's funny.
The Rebel Alliance will save you. Or somebody just went, the Empire. And then they got all the uniforms too and everything just from like the employees. Kylo Ren just walking around surviving the zombie apocalypse. And then you've got like the fact, I think this is also really cool campaigns in, because then you've got like Universal and you've got like the Avengers Academy or whatever. And you've got all like the superhero faction.
That would be so,
that would be a great idea.
Like this is a good idea.
Just within all the theme parks. And then you have like, Like, I guess you could have, like, I don't know if this is actually in Orlando. Like, Mar-a-Lago, I think, is its own other thing. And that's dystopian wasteland.
Yeah, no, fuck the place.
First to go. But then you've got, like, all the, like, the Airbnbs and all the, like, the snowbirds residences and everything. I think this would be an interesting setting. Just, like, just all the different theme parks and how they become their own twisted factions. That could be really interesting.
That'd be fun.
That'd be really fun. And I guess... But I guess based on safety, I don't live in one of the safest cities in Canada. So maybe I'll die first. Like, I don't live in the heart of downtown Toronto, so maybe my chances are slightly higher. I am closer to green space.
I'm number 54. Nice. In the grand scheme of all cities in the...
I mean, all cities in Canada, I'm 29. So I think like, based on these two studies that are totally independent of one another and not scientific whatsoever... I'm in a safer city.
I'm number 54 out of 200.
29. Here we go.
29 out of what, though?
These totally peer-reviewed studies, Jeremy, have indicated that Drew would die first.
Okay.
So Kat had asked, what item of, like, so archaeology question, what item of yours do you think archaeologists would find after an apocalypse? And how do you think these future historians or archaeologists, they're different, would interpret it? Do you have, I know you had something you were eating with, but...
they'll find a very confusing arrowhead.
Flint-napped arrowhead. Yeah. I don't know. You do know what I have here? I do have a compound bow right here.
My bow. Here, just take this. Just attach it and just fire that. Yeah. That'll work out well.
I don't know what... I'm just like... when I'm thinking, like, in the apocalypse, how long are we going to wait? Is it like, are we going, like, centuries into the future and the world is just like rubble? Because I'm also thinking of, like, what will degrade over time. I'm also thinking,
let's about say the 200 years. 200 years.
Okay, 200 years. So most of the things here would be fine. I'm thinking about, like, the room I'm in right now and what people are going to see. And
obviously, yeah, think, like, basically try to think of, like,
yeah,
put yourselves in the mindset of a field school student. They're trying to get their undergrad.
Well, like, like, I'm literally this is my square. This is the square, right?
Yeah, this is their first field school. You know, they're so excited. They just learned about the difference between a shard and a sherd. They just, a boner for archaeology.
Part of me is going to be like, not that I want this to survive, but I feel like the universe would do it in a way where,
basically,
like, the only thing they find is Oriental Adventures.
Basically, basically, Daniel, what is their holy shit, this must be a sword moment?
Are you calling me out?
Don't worry about it. Okay. What is their holy shit? This must be a sword. Director, come over here.
First of all, how dare you? only true fans of the podcast know about this.
I would say for me, they would go, dude, this guy must have
my Annie Awards. No.
Yeah, they find my Annie Award. I'm dead in my room, and they just find my Annie Award.
On you? It would be like, oh, these decorated military officers.
I actually wore my Annie Award to D&D the other night to make sure my fellow players knew who they were playing with.
Exert your dominance?
Yeah. I had to. No. They would find, basically, one of them would turn to the other and go, dude, because they still use that term 200 years from now. Dude, this guy must have had thousands of dollars in miniatures, in these little figurines. They must be for some ritual purpose. The weirdest part is,
oh my God.
I mean, it's been like 200 years, right? We dated parts of the site, so it's like maybe 200 years old. All the paint, it's weird. All the paint got stripped off, I guess, in the 200 years. I thought paint lasted better from this era. And then they take it to a lab. They test for paint. None of it's painted.
No. Okay.
So then they go, this dude spent thousands of dollars on miniatures. Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to think what would survive. He just never painted
any of it. They'd also find too many
It'd be like all the tabletop energy drink cans. Okay, I know what it would be, because I'm thinking of what an archaeology undergrad at a field school would really gravitate towards. I have a an unlicensed scaled, I can't get it right now because it's being the block in my display case, but I have a scale replica of a Ring of the Ram, the D&D magic item.
That's fun. That's fun.
Yeah, I have
that. I'd shit myself if I was that student.
Right? Because it looks really cool. You know what? Like,
Go get it.
Hold here.
There's just like so much. They'd find what else would they find? They'd be like, why does this guy have three fans in his room?
Okay, here we go. This is my Ring of the Ram.
That's dope.
That's cool, right? It's metal.
Where'd you get it from?
Etsy.
Nice.
It's really like if you fucking punch somebody with this, that would hurt.
What if that connected right at the nose? That'd be so rough.
God. Yeah, the Ring of the Ram. I think this is what they would find, and they'd be like, what is this? And they would find all these like the Player's Handbook, the Dungeon Master's Guide, and all this stuff, and maybe if the pages survive, there'll be this Ring of the Ram.
They try to recreate this old-ass game called D&D.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the Ring of the Ram would be the artifact that sends this undergrad down this spiral. But yeah, Ring of the Ram. It's like metal. It's like,
that's cool.
It's like real heavy. I love it. But yeah, I think that would be the artifact that they would find, because I think it would perplex them, because it is unlike any of the jewelry trends of the time, of the age. They'll look at this and be like, oh, is this weird anachronistic style? But then they'll also see all the TTRPG stuff here, and then the Ennies, and they'll be like, oh, like such wealth, such opulence. I think that would be it. We don't have much time left, so we have a couple of other like questions that we should run through. Yeah. Jeremy asked, what do y'all think of Dark Sun? Don't care for Dark Sun.
Don't care for Dark Sun.
Aimless asks, what aspect of modern civility are you secretly eager to throw off in the apocalypse? It's going to say a lot about ourselves.
I can walk into anyone's house and absolutely blow up the bathroom with my shoes on and just blow up the
massive dumps
and feel no shame.
I like that one. I think that might be.
And like, you know, if I flush,
and why would you flush? Stopped
up if it, hey, because I'm a good citizen.
Yeah, but this is, we're talking about what aspects of modern civility are you secretly eager to throw off?
Yeah, so yeah.
Yours is,
and
like
if I flush and it gets stopped up, and if it gets stopped up,
you ain't plunging.
I walk out the door and I tell nobody because there's no one to tell.
Right. So yours,
I never
is,
have to live with the shame.
Okay, but you still flush in yours.
Yeah, because I'm a good person, Daniel.
Okay, well, apparently I'm not. My answer would be like, oh, this is Asians represent. I'm going to wear my shoes in everybody's house. Can you imagine, though? Like, I mean, like, if we did an Asians represent TTRPG, every time the characters enter a new settlement, they take off their shoes. You're the first to die.
Yeah, because as soon as you have to run, and you're running through the brambles with your socks on. Like,
now, it's a diehard scenario.
Yeah.
Okay, so Aimless also asked, after your experience with the pandemic, do you think people would actually run from zombies if politicians were denying their existence?
Yeah.
I think the people who deserve to survive would run.
I think yes, because I think, not to get into some, like, listen, no bummers on this podcast, but
no, you know, it's just it comes, only no dice.
Yeah. When it came to the pandemic, I think for a lot of people, unfortunately, it seemed very invisible. You know,
our experiences were so different.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of things hardly changed in St. Louis, that's not even true. Things changed in St. Louis. Things did not change in St. Charles County, the neighboring county that I worked in. Most things did not change. Those of us who were trying wore a mask, and that was about it. You know, like that was,
yeah,
you know, nothing really changed in terms of guidelines. And when they did, they got reverted pretty quickly. You know, everything went back pretty quickly there.
Yeah.
especially once vaccines were out, and then it was just immediately everything's A-OK. And I was like, I don't know about that part, but OK.
Yeah, I mean, same here. I still wear a mask when I go indoors. Like, I'm still like pretty cautious.
Yeah.
But,
you know, I think for a lot of people, yeah, like, OK, people had COVID, but it was like, oh, Jerry has COVID, so we just won't see him for 2 weeks, and business per usual, you know, and so you didn't have to look at it, you know, and that's not to say that other people didn't. Plenty of people had to look it in the face, especially those who were working on the front lines of the pandemic and the health and the health sector, as well as those who lost people or are currently experiencing prolonged issues with long COVID. Of course, they had to look at it, but a lot of people didn't have to see it, and so it was invisible. If I see someone eating someone on the news, I'm fucking out.
I'm out. I'm done.
Yeah. As soon as I see someone down the street getting munched on like it's fucking Flavor Town, like I'm going the other way. You know, there's just something more visible and visceral about that. And yes, there will be people who won't do anything or won't say anything and will think it's a hoax. Yeah, they'll get fucking eaten. But I think the ratio will be far skewed.
Towards people running. Dude,
yeah.
I an old job I had, it was at a mall, and there's a robbery. We thought it was a shooting. They like went into like a Rolex and like smashed the glass with a hammer, and it sounded like a gunshot.
Sure.
People were like fucking running. And I was watching teenagers trying to get into shops because they were like, well, I want to go and shop. No, get the fuck out of here. This might be a shooting. Yeah. There might be an active shooter here. And like, oh my God, in survival instincts, lost to some.
Honestly, when you know, especially me living in the US, especially living in a pretty red state, you know, that being Missouri, I probably won't see a zombie before I start hearing pop,
gunshots.
Pop. Yeah. You know, that's what I'll probably hear first, you know.
Toronto would just be screams. It'd just be screams. Yeah, like, and then gunshots.
Hey!
So, God, these are great questions. These are great questions. I think the thing we took out of this episode, before we get into the off-topic questions, the remaining questions that you instigated, by the way.
Listen, don't worry about it.
I think that there is a... I don't want to say from our audience, but I think you and I need to play a post-apocalyptic RPG.
I'm so into it.
I think we need to play End of the World. I think we need to play it in just some random city that we don't know. Be like, hey, Drew and Daniel went there for vacation for some sort of convention. What are we going to do? How are we going to escape?
I just thought of a small series.
Okay, what is it?
We play characters... And we take those characters through each of them, but it's like a multiverse. They don't connect, but it's the same characters put into different scenarios, the four different scenarios.
And are we using different post-apocalyptic TTRPGs for the systems?
I don't know. But it doesn't End of the World have the four different...
It has the four... So I'm saying four End of the World games.
And it's like these
characters... And we play those scenarios.
It's not like they happen... in continuity, like in the same setting, but it's like a multiverse where it is
four
different
really
versions of the apocalypse.
People.
Yeah, four really unlucky people
who have to deal with the apocalypse. Four different types of apocalypses.
Yeah, in four different lifetimes.
I think that's the pitch right there. I think that'd be a lot of fun. We just play through the as written adventures in those books.
That'd be fun.
Okay, I think we got to do that. I think we got to at least try it. Okay. That said, folks, I want to thank you for like joining Drew and I for this episode of No Dice, No Problem, the show where we talk about whatever we want. Will we survive the apocalypse? My chances are slightly higher because my city is slightly safer than Drew's based on two totally peer-reviewed, totally related studies conducted by realtor websites. I think we stand a fair chance at surviving at least a week. I think we'd survive a week.
That's pretty good, honestly.
I think we'd survive a week. I think we're shut-ins, so we wouldn't actually be there during the initial outbreak, because it always happens in like a really public space, like a restaurant, a club, a bar, a shopping mall.
Sure, yeah.
But we'd be like, yeah, we'd be at home playing games, and we might even not even notice that anything happened until one of us went on Twitter.
We're playing Battlefield. Slowly but surely, people are logging off.
Yeah. We're just like, where is everybody?
And then we can't find matches.
And then the EA servers shut down. And we're like,
that does not necessarily indicate a zombie apocalypse.
No, that's true. That's totally true.
That could just happen normally.
But yeah, I think we wouldn't notice until one of us went on social media. Yeah, because if we were in just like a private Discord server, we might not even notice. We'd just be like playing games. And I think that's what's going to get us through the first day. Just not even noticing. Just like pure ignorance of what's going on in the world. But then the moment one of us pulls up Twitter, game over. We freak out and we shut ourselves in.
We retweet it.
Engagement. yeah, I think that's what would happen. But that said, I want to thank you for another great episode of No Dice, No Problem. What will we talk about next time? I honestly don't know. We'll see. Although I think...
we just fucking wing it.
Well, the creator clash is happening, so I think we've got to do potentially a live react. Who knows?
I'm excited for that. I want
to
see it.
I'm just really glad that we do this show. I think it's a great opportunity for us to just like be ourselves and talk about whatever we want and be silly. Yeah. But that said, we talked a lot about poop this time, but this was the apocalypse. So anything can happen during the apocalypse. That said, we'll see you folks next month. And of course, make sure to listen to the main Asians Represent show, where we talk about more serious things. Like most recently, we talked about the OSR and decolonizing RPGs.